Okay, well, to take you through it, the grey buildings are existing, and the total area of those is 1,634. The pink...
So you can see that number,
1,634.
Thank you.
The pink buildings, so building one, building two, in the first green bubble, are proposed buildings under the 2017 consent. There would also be an addition to the main lodge building, which would go into the second smaller green bubble. So that amount adds up to 866.
And am I playing there? Am I pink buildings?
Pink outline.
Pink outline.
Building one.
Building one, building two. It's in the pink box.
In the green bubble.
The two possible buildings. Okay.
Yeah.
White squares or pink boundaries.
Yes, sorry. Okay. So each of those buildings has an area, this is indicative, of 375 square metres each. So those two equal 750. And then the remainder to get us up to 866 would be an extension to the main lodge building, which would extend into the second smaller green bubble.
That's not marked as a box.
No, it's not there in pink.
No, okay.
So, I do have the areas.
Just repeat the extension, possible extension of the main building, can't
of the main lodge, it's the remainder of
the remainder
866, of take away 750.
116.
Thank you.
Please.
So, the green bubbles show where the landscape could absorb further development. But the green bubbles will not be covered in buildings because of topography and also because we need separation between buildings to plant native vegetation to soften them.
I understand that. My question is what proportion of the green bubbles will be occupied by buildings?
As shown.
Yes.
So
what are the areas of the green bubbles?
What are the areas of the green bubbles?
I've got the areas of the green bubbles. The bigger green bubble is 3,530 square metres, and the smaller green bubble is 790 square metres. But I think it's very important to understand that those areas would not be covered by additional building. Okay, good. Yes.
In the areas you've identified for potential development, where not so much the extension of the new buildings, will be reasonably difficult to see from the lake?
Yes, they will be. Because, and the rear building, building one, would be very difficult to see because it's at the back of a terrace. The building at the front will be partly visible. It'll be very similar to the existing buildings because it will be surrounded by native vegetation. And that is speaking from a point of view of viewing the development from the lake. The buildings are harder to see from other places, such as the Queenstown Glenorchy Road. Both of those buildings would be only very partly visible. None of the buildings are visible from the SCAFE property. No.
There will be no alteration of any kind. Perhaps no, no alteration that the law would say was minimis and can be ignored.
I think, given that there's existing development there, and if it is designed appropriately, as we've suggested provisions for, and with the native planting, then the capacity is there to absorb that change. The existing visibility of the existing development and the development as proposed with 2017, the visual effect is low or very low from all locations.
But just in terms of visibility as opposed to effect.
Yes, just visibility.
It's
visibility
is
yes, it is. So from the Queenstown Glenorchy Road,
yeah,
you get a glimpse of about 1 second coming around a corner of a part of a building between native vegetation that's next to the roadside. From the car park, the 7 mile car park, if you walk to the very edge of it and look over, you can see a part of the main lodge building, you can see a portion of roofs of other buildings, but the majority of the site is covered in native vegetation, as is the surrounding area. If you walk down the track, the beginning of the 7 mile track from the 7 mile car park, for the first descent of about 20 metres, 30 metres, you can see the same view as the car park at the top, but then you get lower and everything disappears. So it's a matter of minutes before you can't see anything anymore. Then the track runs along the next to the lake, below the development, and the terrace is really steep. You can't see a thing, apart from a pittosporum bush in your face. You can walk out onto the jetty, and again, you can just see a glimpse, nothing more. In fact, actually, I don't even know if you can see anything from the jetty now, because everything's grown so much. The rest of the track, you can't see anything. From the lake, you can see the existing buildings, and you will see if additional buildings are added, they'll look similar to the existing buildings. You can see it, but it sits very well within the landscape because there's enough native vegetation around it to soften it. And it's the existing buildings have now been there for quite a long time. They're accepted. They're also low, and they're on this terrace, and then they're surrounded by very high mountains. So the scale of the building compared to the surrounding landscape, is the scale of the buildings is very, very small. From the residential areas on the hill on top, I forget what's that subdivision called?
Forest.
At night, you may be able to see lights. If you look very closely, maybe you could see a little bit of roof. That's it. Very, very low visibility.
Well, thank you very much for going into that detail. That was extremely helpful. Now we come to this gnarly question of remote or remoteness, which I presume you were here before.
Yes.
I suppose as a landscape architect, I'm interested in your view of what remote or remoteness means, and how that applies at this site.
Yes. I agree with the previous landscape architect that it's a perception. So the site is located only a matter of kilometres from Queenstown Central, but when you're on the site, you feel remote because you're looking out into a lake and Walter and Cecil Peak on the other side, and from the site, you can't see any surrounding residential areas or barely any houses. You feel remote. You're surrounded by native planting. Wild native planting, and also it is a distance, you can't see the site barely from Queenstown Glenorchy Road, and the road actually turns away inland from the site at that point because it has to go up the hill and over into Wilson's Bay. So when you're coming from Queenstown, the road is close to the lake, you can look down and see the lake, but then it goes inland and Matakari Lodge is between the road and the lake, but the area is a lot wider at that point because the road's gone inland. So you can't hear the road. And it feels very remote. It's like when people say, oh, I live so close to town, but when I get home, I just get away from it all. It's like that. It's like being in the country, living in the country,
even
but having a 10-minute commute.
Maybe 100 houses in that very area around.
You can't see them.
Is that not something that many properties could develop if they planted up their properties and nestled their buildings and to plant up?
No, it's actually quite rare to get everything aligning. And I see what you're getting at with these zones, but I think particularly for this site, it works really well. It does feel remote. It is surrounded by outstanding natural landscape. And it's quite hard to get that in other places because it is so close to Queenstown, and it's the topography that makes the difference. It's in its own little bowl.
Yeah, so it's not just the fact, like you've stressed, about the amount of planting, because, I mean, lots of sites big enough could plant themselves to screen them from their neighbours.
Well,
and not
you
be able
can.
To see. But in this case, there's a top...
It's topographical, but it's also the planting is wild outside of the site. A lot of it is just natural, native bush, and it's quite hard to create that. If you had a piece of land with nothing on it, it would take you decades to create native bush, and have it as a functioning ecosystem with birds and wildlife.
Is that because it joins to quite an extent, the 12-mile, 7-mile...
To Dock Reserve.
The reserve, yes.
Yes.
Well, I'd like to thank you for arranging to have a couple of caribou fly past when we had the visit. That was
good.
Okay, thank you for that. As I calculate it, I mean, you both agree on the size of the existing buildings.
Yes.
So it's really about the difference between his number and your number and the existing buildings. And so, and he commented on this in his verbal response to us. For him, it would be 360 something square metres available as a controlled activity, and beyond that, restricted discretionary, I think. Whereas with your 2,500, there would be 860 something. Am I right with those calculations? So
yes.
He's saying nearly three times as much that is the difference between his number and your number. It's not. And he's saying that that's the number that would be allowed as a control activity. And then beyond that, the additional, whatever it is, 500 square metres would need to be considered as a restricted discretionary. And your assessment of it was done in the context of a resource consent application, presumably, not a controlled activity, but
a resource consent
application. A resource consent that's more than controlled.
Yes.
Yes. So I guess what he's saying is that that level of assessment is needed for the particular buildings beyond an additional 300 and something square metres.
Well, I would say that I've done that. I've done that with the 2017 application, and Dr. Reid and Mr. Jones have agreed that what we have shown in the plans leading through all the analysis and the plan we were just looking at before,
yeah,
with the green bubbles.
You're not proposing, I mean, this zone doesn't propose buildings 1 and 2, it just proposes 866 square metres of building in one or other of those green blobs.
Yes, but the scope within the green blobs is
yeah.
very limited as to where you can put the buildings.
Mm-hmm.
And so where I've got them, you could move them a little, but not much.
Because of the topography.
The topography, and also the need for wastewater.
Yeah, an existing constraint on the site.
Yes, exactly. So I think that Mr. Jones, instead of comparing the existing area, site coverage area to 2,500, is not a very good comparison. I think you should be looking at our representation of the 2017 resource consent and comparing that to 2,500, and the difference is 40 square metres.
Yeah, well, yes, that fairly much takes, I mean, it matches what you're applying for.
Yeah.
As one representation
yeah.
of that.
Because we did go through the full assessment. We had polls, and we worked with Warren and Marnie on the buildings, and we moved them round, and we looked from the lake, and we did 3D modelling, and we worked out, you know, Warren and Marnie would say to me, what about this? And I'd say, go and look, and say, no, you can't have it there. Make it smaller, put it here, and so then we came up with what the proposal is of the 2017 with the buildings, two extra buildings located. So it was a very thorough assessment process.
So were some of the locations that you said no to within the green bubbles?
No.
No, okay, because I mean that's the difference between a zone and what you're requesting, what your client's requesting through the zoning, which is controlled activity in the whole of those bubbles, up to 2,500 square metres, or 800 or something additional, versus being able to decline something within those bubbles. And you're saying that any location, any practical location within those green bubbles, up to the scale that your client's requesting, is the effects are able to be managed through
correct.
Conditions.
Yeah.
And you tested that through the different alternatives you looked at for the previous application.
Yes.
Alright. That's all the questions from that, thank you.
Okay. Thank you. Just one if I may, just
No. I wouldn't. I mean, on paper you can look at where all the houses are, but it's a unique residential area, you would say. Yeah, and when you're on the site, you don't feel like you're in a residential area.
And would that be the same at night?
I haven't been there at night, but from the point of view of the site, I don't believe you'd feel like you're in a residential area because you're looking outwards into the lake and the mountains on the other side, not back up to any houses that are behind you. And most houses you can't see anyway because of the viewing angle and the steepness and the vegetation.
Yeah, apart from thanking for caring, it's all good.
My name is Jason Bartlett. My statement of evidence concerns the potential traffic effects of the Matakari Lodge Limited submission requesting the lot containing Matakari Lodge is to be rezoned as rural visitor. Since preparing my statement of evidence, I have reviewed the rebuttal evidence of Mr. Michael Smith, Section 8. Mr. Smith's opinion and assessment of the site's access, Ferrycroft Row, and its intersection with Glenorchy Road differs from mine. With respect to the traffic flow on Ferrycroft Road, this has been based on an assessment using design traffic generation rates for similar activities throughout New Zealand and obtained through NZTA research. This is a standard methodology for establishing a traffic flow, and using the 85th percentile rate means that the resulting traffic flow is likely to be an overestimation, allowing for a more robust assessment. Mr. Smith's and Mr. Rossiter's predominant concern is the available site distance at Ferrycroft Row, the intersection with it being a significant safety concern. In Mr. Smith's evidence, he quotes portions from a previous version of Austroad's guidance, whilst he has based his assessment on drivers travelling at the speed limit, 100 kilometres an hour, and infers that they will be taking in vast lake views rather than concentrating on driving. I do not agree with Mr. Smith and Mr. Roster's assessment in this matter. To investigate Mr. Smith's assumptions, I have recently undertaken a brief speed survey at the site. This revealed an operating speed of less than 70 kilometres, which aligns with my original assessment based on the road environment. Current versions of Austroads describe the driving environment of Queenstown Glenorchy Road as low speed road, with difficult alignment resulting in a high degree of driver alertness. This also aligns with my selected driver reaction time of 1.5 seconds. There are important elements when considering an intersection within this road environment. To inform the Commission, I have provided extracts from Austroad's guidance, which relates to the assessment of operating speeds and reaction time. This is provided in Attachment 1. I've essentially provided that for your information. I do not intend to go through it with you unless you require it. Based on this, I consider that Mr. Smith and Mr. Rossiter's assessment of site distance is not based on the actual road environment and operating conditions of Queenstown Glenorchy Road. On this matter, I consider that Ferrycroft Road intersection has sufficient site distance for the road environment. In my statement of evidence, I described the safety improvement works proposed on Ferrycroft Road and at the intersection of Queenstown Glenorchy Road. For the benefit of the Commission, I have attached a drawing showing the agreed safety improvements under the resource consent RM171104 in Attachment 2. This is a resource consent application which is currently on hold. I confirm that a number of these improvements are on Crown land administered by the Department of Conservation. We have discussed these improvements with DOC, who accepted them in principle at the time, noting that these works will need to be formally applied for and approved by DOC. These are all simple road improvements which do not require extensive earthworks and can be undertaken within the existing formation. And if anything, I apologise that those plans have been provided in A4 rather than the original A3, so they may be difficult to read. Mr. Smith does not consider the suggested zone provisions in my statement of evidence. These zone provisions were specifically suggested such that any development of the site, for example, a larger or different type of visitor activity, which breached the site standards, would trigger a transport assessment and further consideration of the access concerns. I note that these suggested provisions have been adopted by Ms. Grace's rebuttal evidence. This means that the zone provision have been modified in order to allow for a full assessment of transport effects should the requested zoning result in any future unanticipated development at the site. I have undertaken the transport assessment for the requested zone change and have provided additional information in my evidence in this summary. I consider that Mr. Smith and Mr. Ross's assessment of site distances does not consider the true road environment. And finally, I consider that my suggested zone provisions, which are now part of the draft zone provisions, are appropriate to manage and appropriately access for any future change of activity at the site. Just trying to get my words around access and assess and, yeah. Vehicles per hour, sorry. And the one is the note based on the NZTA RR453 trips and parkings. That's the NZTA research.
Okay.
Yep, so VBHS. He's treating the reaction time suggested, and I suppose if I may actually perhaps go into, the reaction time he suggested is something you'd apply to a very mundane road, a road where there are no features to keep the driver alert, and my example of that would be perhaps a Canterbury road or a road which is generally flat, generally a bit, as a driver you might be a bit bored by it, rather than the Glen Orchy road environment, which I feel is quite different in the fact that it's a mountainous road, it's through terrain that you're having to concentrate on the road and what's going on around you. I do not believe that a driver would be staring out to the vast lake vistas.
Summary, the way you put it was it's a low speed road, difficult alignment, resulting in a high degree of
driver
alertness.
Exactly. And
is that resulting in anemic necessarily the same thing, because there are lots of people who write themselves off in this district who don't apply the requisite degree of leads.
There possibly are. It's both, really. If you're driving it, you're going to have some form of alertness. So hence, if you're approaching an intersection, that alertness will also allow you to take appropriate actions at that stage as well, be it something on the road, being wanted to go off the road maybe, but yeah, it's still a symptom of the same thing. It's that state which the driver is at to be able to navigate through whatever may approach from in front of them.
And in terms of the issue with the, say, highway connection, in effect the steepness on the Queenstown side leading the risk of larger vehicles grounding out.
Yes.
What's the solution to that?
Probably earthworks. If you wanted to take larger vehicles into that access, you would need to try and flatten off that gradient such that they can do it without grounding into the road. There's two documented incidents of trucks, large trucks, grounding themselves there. One of them was definitely associated with construction works at the site. I'm unsure when the other one was, but it was a construction type truck. It wasn't a tourist type vehicle. That doesn't say it doesn't exist, it's just not been documented or identified. And yeah, essentially it would require realigning that intersection.
This isn't shown on this diagram.
No, that is not shown on that diagram. That diagram is essentially what we came up with through the resource consent process to create an environment that would essentially allow Farrowcroft Road to work as a low volume driveway. So less than 200 vehicles per day, and so it's increasing the abilities to pass. At the moment it's very narrow. So it's just providing some widening by utilising the existing road formation, essentially. So it's filling in water channels and so that they can be trafficable, and extending the width of seal where it's possible to, as well as providing delineation so that drivers know where the edge is, and signage for good guidance.
But the works that you've just responded to, hear about realigning the intersection and doing some earthworks at that intersection. Is it your view that work necessary, or might be necessary to accommodate the increase in usage as a result of the redesigning? Or not?
If you wanted to put something where you're having coaches going there regularly, then yes, it would be required. So, essentially, the luxury lodge that's there at the moment hasn't had coaches and the managers last 3 years. So that vehicle type is not associated with the current activity and the activity under the resource consent.
Under
the zoning, if something came along that had to have that heavy vehicle access, say coaches, then there would need to be some assessment of the intersection, and that's where the zone provisions are important to pick that up. Well, if you change the building size, for instance, or if you change the type of activity to, say, a commercial tourism activity rather than visitor accommodation, it may be picked up. If it was more than 30 people, it would be. Yes, okay, so. Sorry?
So Mr. Freeman suggested that.
Yeah, so if we go back there, I suppose, if you're changing the activity to less than 30 people to the permitted area, you could accommodate them without coaches. You don't need a large bus to take only 30 people. So if you breach the 30 people, you're launching into something where you need a larger vehicle. So essentially, yeah, I think there's enough in there at the moment that for the current activity and for the resource consent activity that it's acceptable, and I think there's sufficient zone provisions in there to pick up where that changes.
Maybe this work required at the intersection, which may require Crown or Council or NZTA approval if it's deemed to be necessary as a result of whatever's going to happen on the site. The principal control on building anyway is just a controlled activity, so it can't be declined. Would it be normal to work these things out and have a better idea as to whether or not these improvements can happen before rezoning the site? Given that the zone is quite permissive of changes of activity or a certain scale of building increase?
It probably is more a planning type question, if I can dodge that.
Okay, that's fine.
I think Mr. Freeman comes in.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'll ask him that in a minute.
Yeah. Certainly in resource consents, it's quite normal to come to a point.
No, but we're not in resource consents.
Exactly.
What worries me about it is you talk about resource consents all the time, but
yeah.
Because of zoning. My last question, which is more technical. We've heard from neighbours that the car parking is already insufficient for this site, and the car parking is spilling out of the site and is now requiring adjoining dock land to accommodate car parking.
Mm-hmm.
And this zone will allow for further buildings and potentially further people on the site. What's your view about the ability of the site to accommodate car parking?
I think it comes down to that same landscape assessment as to where that can occur, and being able to facilitate the construction of parking areas in those locations.
On the site?
On the site, yes.
Is there room on the site to put additional car parking?
Yeah, there is.
Considering that perhaps there isn't enough room on the site for the car parking at the moment.
Certainly there's been talk of additional car parks before. Is it actually identified in that landscape plan?
There is
a section on that landscape plan which talks about possible car parking, and that's an area that could be developed for it. My understanding is car parking isn't provided in that location at the moment. Is that where there's some wastewater sort of stuff somewhere near there too?
Pink square box.
Yes.
So in your view, is there sufficient room on the site to provide for the car parking associated with the expanded buildings permitted by this rezoning, which would be accepted, within the site itself?
Yes, definitely.
In that area?
Definitely. As far as the transport assessment goes, there's definitely enough area for it. And I suppose the landscaping may actually restrict as to where I can put it, but yeah, definitely there's enough area to develop sufficient car parking.
Thank you.
Did I say it as it should?
Yeah.
Sorry?
Did I say that the landscaping should possibly drop the car parking, putting it out there?
Yeah, I think I'd agree with you.
just
the rule you're talking about is design and layout to site access on site parking, manoeuvring and traffic.
Correct.
Generation. Is that sufficient enough to capture that, or is this a question potentially from the state?
I feel that's enough so that anyone can look at it and say, well, I need a story on how that's going to work then. It's essentially saying, give me a transport assessment that covers these elements.
And so with that, an addendum to that, because of the nature of that intersection, is there enough space to do it?
Is there enough space to improve that intersection?
To make that intersection available, then you can take that as a right.
Yeah, there is enough space physically, because it's partially in road reserve and it's partially on dock land that it be, or Crown land administered by dock. I'm not too sure what the technical term there is, but I believe there's enough space to do it. It would just be because of the earthworks element would be it would take a bit of, how do I describe talking to dock? if earthworks are required, that would be that will probably be another trigger in their thought process. Now, they are a road controlling operator on their own right, so.
It's not a particularly sensitive area, though, in terms of job. And one of the last question is that the improvements to the road network that was mentioned with other submitters, that there'd been some discussion about it, and then they'd been put on, nothing had happened. And I'm assuming that is due to the resource consent being involved?
No, some has happened already. There's a tight curve shown on that drawing even. It has already had some widening undertaken on it, for instance.
The curve at the bottom?
Yes, yep. So there's been a number of works already done. I think there had to be a couple of trees removed and curve widening. There was a number of parts that were part of the previous consent and they have been undertaken.
Thank you.
Just one clarification for me, please. This is paragraph 34 of your evidence, and Chief, don't need to go to just a number of times the coaches might come to the site. You said maybe monthly, and I think even you said they haven't had one for 3 years, but then your next sentence talks about that it's contemplated. Do you know, I mean, in consultation with your client, do you know in terms of the traffic movement what they might be expecting in the future? Is it likely to be more coaches?
I don't believe that's the sort of business they run. That they have not had a coach vehicle there for 3 years, and I think that's because how long the manager's been there, or how since the last one turned up, I'm not sure. But they do have some larger passenger vehicles, vans and that sort of thing, and they also have laundry trucks and that sort of thing that do come to the site. So it's really that.
Thank you. I'll start at paragraph 3. In my statement of evidence, I propose a number of recommended changes to the RVZ provisions that were included in the section 42A report. With the exception of total ground floor area restriction of 2,000 square metres, I agree with Ms Grace in relation to her comments concerning my changes to standard 46522. I assume that Ms Grace is comfortable with adding traffic generation as a matter of discretion if standard 4652 is breached. In relation to traffic consideration, Ms Grace agrees with my recommended changes, which adds the transport chapter to provision 4631 and the amended matters of control for traffic-related considerations in terms of rule 464 6F. On the advice of Ms. Lucas, I recommended a new standard 465XX that requires buildings to be separated by at least 10 metres on the site. Ms. Grace has recommended a second limb to the standard that requires a native planting plan. I'm comfortable with this addition as proposed by Ms. Grace. I will address two outstanding issues in relation to the request to impose the RVZ on the site. Total maximum ground floor area. Mr. Jones has considered the statement of evidence compiled by Ms. Lucas and considers the evidence provides sound reason and justification for rezoning the site to RVZ. Ms. Grace accepts the views of Mr. Jones on this matter from a landscape perspective. The remaining point of contention from a landscape perspective is a recommendation by Mr. Jones that the total maximum ground floor area of 2,000 square metres for the site as opposed to the limit of 2,500 as proposed in my recommended changes to the RVZ. A figure of 2,500 would enable another 866 square metres of ground floor area built on the site. The figure of 2,500 has been based on a detailed assessment of the capacity of the site to accommodate further built form from functional and guest privacy amenity perspectives, while at the same time protecting the landscape values of the setting. Mr. Jones states that a limit of 2,500 is inappropriate for the site, however, there's no explanation as to why he has formed the stance. In my opinion, the limit should remain at 2,500 based on the careful consideration of the site's capacity to absorb further built form. Transportation matters. Mr. Bartlett has addressed the various issues raised by Mr. Smith in relation to traffic considerations. In Mr. Bartlett's opinion, Mr. Smith has applied the incorrect assessment criteria for the sight lines associated with the access from the site onto the Glenorchy Queenstown Road, plus Mr. Smith has not addressed the additional matters of control discretion in the RVZ provisions that deal with transportation matters. Ms. Grace forms the view that if the access to the site is already causing traffic safety issues, and the access upgrades are not practical, then the assessment of traffic matters at consent stage is not appropriate within a controlled activity application. As detailed in my statement of evidence, rules 29.5.14, access and road design, and 29.5.16, design of vehicle crossings, within the PDP transport chapter will apply to any future consent application to expand. If these rules are breached, then an RD consent is required, and this planning status provides the council with teeth to require an access upgrade or potentially decline an application. In my experience, a hilly mountainous area like Queenstown often presents transportation issues which are very commonly worked through in consent applications. There is nothing unusual about the consent access arrangement to the site. It is adequate and manageable. Mr. Bartlett considers that there is an access upgrade that is physically possible without extensive earthworks. This upgrade, of course, relies on permission from DOC. However, Manukau Lodge has had a long-standing beneficial working relationship with DOC in terms of the removal of wilding pines on the nearby dockland, the use of dockland for ancillary storage purposes, and I note that's been governed by concession, and finally, a previous access upgrade on dockland. In my opinion, I consider access issues can be resolved and that the rezoning of the site will not lead to a conflict with policy 46226D. And just on the access matters, the consent in 2012 for the owner's cottage, there's a condition in that consent that required the access to be upgraded. And as part of that process, Medicare gained permission from DOC. So the comment yesterday from Mr. Scaife that the access was supposed to have been upgraded and it hasn't, in my view, is not correct. There's a consent condition. Medicare have complied with that condition for the consent back in 2012. Thank you.
Thank you.
Transport section?
Transport.
I don't have that directly in front of me, sorry. I do now.
The question is to me is that for development within a controlled activity rule, problem that the kind of improvements that Bart was saying might be required by having dock approval through a Reserves Act process, potentially the inception, NZTA approval, within the rubric of a controlled activity rule, which cannot impose, when you cannot impose conditions that require third party consent. So, is that an issue, and what's the answer?
It's not sorry, I just did. Fortunately, it's not NZTA, it's a council road. So in terms of third party approvals, we're dealing with DOC, and we're also dealing with the QLDC. The discussions we've had recently with DOC, with the DOC person on site, in principle, the physical work shown on the plans from Mr. Bartlett, the DOC person is comfortable with those works. And the recommended approach is to vary the current easement that Matakari has over the Crown land. So yes, there is a process to go through. Can I absolutely guarantee DOC will give that give the approval? No, I can't. Indications to date, plus previous dealings with DOC, in my view, it seems positive. The reality is, if the upgrades to the intersectional, to the access can't happen, and transport rules are being breached, then that gives the council the ability to notify potentially to decline the application.
What application?
Well, if you're applying for the two new buildings, so the buildings on site are a controlled activity, but the application as a whole has breaches in the transport section.
Simple rights, basically has to follow the code practice, and that's essentially where we're breaching it.
Mm-hmm.
So it's actually part A.
Yeah, so it's part A, which talks about all vehicle access to fee simple lots. You've got rule 29.5.14, A, first point. So all vehicle access to fee simple lots, so that in my view that captures a proposal, and then it goes down to the council's subdivision code of practice, land development and subdivision code of practice. So A would apply to the application as a whole, and if A and the code of practice is complied with, then obviously the restricted discretionary consent would not be required under that rule.
But this is a standard in Chapter 29. The standard has to relate to a rule that references that standard. So what's the rule? Non-compliance of the standard 2.
Yeah, so obviously as part of my recommended changes to the rural visitor zone, there's the reference to putting the transport chapter into the district-wide rules that apply.
Well, no, I don't think it works like that, because it just says that attention is drawn to the following district-wide chapter. They have to operate according to what they say. That doesn't, just adding that, it's not going to make, it's not going to substantively change the rule framework. Like advice,
Well, in my view, if you've got, you know, in applying for, let's say that the buildings on site are a controlled activity, you've still got the transport section to adhere to or potentially breach. You've got earthworks, for instance. You've also got signage. You've got a range of other chapters that that would apply as part of an all-encompassing resource consent application. In terms of the notified version and the amendments that I've suggested, there is no direct reference to Chapter 29.
But 29 has illicit activity in 29.4. That's where the rules come from for 29. We're just looking at a standard.
Sorry, 29.4?
Yeah, so, I mean, maybe it's like its own...
So I'm just trying to.
Where's the activity that standard would be attached to in Chapter 29?
So
you're telling us that that'll capture it.
In terms of visitor accommodation per se being attached to this chapter, to 29.
Or anything really. I mean, say there's an application for some new buildings.
Mm-hmm.
They're less than 500 square metres. And they're less than, they're within the 2,500 square metres maximum, so they only trigger a controlled activity for the building.
Yep.
The activity is actually permitted.
Yes.
And the activity of visitor accommodation or commercial recreation are both permitted.
Mm-hmm.
So they're their rules. We've just got a controlled activity there, which can't be declined. But at the same time, the council wizards often looks at all the other chapters, the earthworks and whatever, and it comes to this chapter. And it can't just look at a standard in that chapter, it's got to look at a rule in that chapter that triggers the standard. And I want you to show me what that rule is, I'm not saying it's not there, it's just, because it is unusual, in my humble view, to be relying on a standard in a different chapter to be the main controlling activity over an effect of something that would otherwise be a controlled activity would have to be granted.
Well, certainly unless it's cross-referenced.
Unless it's very clearly linked.
Yeah, like I had one last year. I know this is a different set of circumstances where I had a controlled activity for a garage in a setback in a low density zone. So the garage itself was a controlled activity.
Mm-hmm.
However, the egress onto the street was too close to an intersection, which needed to be 25 metres, and it was 18. So council takes the approach that, despite the fact the garage is a controlled activity, because it breached the setback distance, we had to move the garage further away from the intersection. So whether it's right or wrong, the council will look at the rural visitor zone and the transport section and any other chapters in the district plan, such as earthworks, signage, and so forth, in considering this application. And also why I've added further matters of control for built form or additional built form in terms of access, on-site minute parking, manoeuvring, and traffic generation.
I suppose that's why I start with the issue that is a controlled activity status sufficient in the circumstances to need third-party approval in order to make it happen.
Yep. No, I fully recognise that, you know, the upgrade that is indicated on the plan is subject to DOC approval. And as I said before, the indications to date in the past is they, you know, that 3 years ago in 2017, DOC were on site, and what was proposed, they verbally said, yes, we're fine. And then, unfortunately, kind of now, as the application went on hold and nothing's moved for 3 years. But look, there still needs to be that approval from DOC, and the other authorisation would be council on the opposite side of the intersection coming off the Glenorchy Queenstown Road to allow vehicles to move around if someone's turning right into the site.
I mean, you say you've been through this application for a garage, which, I mean, on facet it is maybe similar.
Mm.
So what activity room triggers the standard that calls it to require consent?
So this is the garage?
Yeah,
That would have been... Just
is it...
Sorry, if
you
give
me.
I do have a chapter here, I just haven't.
So you've got 29.4, the list of activities there. It's not probably got a high traffic generator, it's not a rental vehicle business, it's not an accessory parking, it's not a fixed bus shelter.
That's
29.4.4.
Oh, maybe.
What
is
it?
29.4.14? You've got, if you go look at 29.4.4,
yeah.
So if you go back up the top at the table 29.1, it's got transport related activities outside of a road. So they're the activities that are captured by the following rules. And then if I just flip over just to take you through it, 29, and if we go into, and then we've got outside of a road. And then it jumps into the outside of the road.
Yeah. Lovely tree.
So 13 yards within a road.
Yep, within a road.
If you can't help us with how this works.
No.
I mean, you're relying on this rule, you're a traffic engineer. And you're the only person that can give me evidence
of
how it works.
Yep. Okay. I just can. Give me a second, I'll just have another look through, please.
I wonder if we could take 10 minutes to just have Mr.
If the preferable way to proceed is, as well, is rather than us combing back and forth through these rules, is that if I give you leave by the end of the week to file a memorandum appointing and in effect giving us the schematic.
How that triggers and works.
Thank you.
interpretation of remote and difficult to see. So from a planning point of view, how do you see this location fitting within that purpose and objectives and policies of for an RV zone?
In terms of its degree of remoteness?
Well, all the things that is the purpose and
objectives
and policies for an RV zone.
Yeah, so I think in terms of physically, it is close to Queenstown, but I think and I agree with Ms. Lucas in terms of the times that I've stood on the site because of the topography rising up behind it. It's almost like an amphitheatre where basically you feel like you're standing on the edge of a lake, which you are, looking towards distant mountains. So you do feel remote. It is private, and you're not seeing, for instance, you're not a lodge in a flat paddock where the next door neighbours are 30 metres away. You can see what they've got on their clothesline. So, in my view, physically, it's not as remote as, say, Blanket Bay, but in terms of the feel, the function, it has a degree of remoteness.
And
just a quick question, because you referenced Blanket Bay. What makes Blanket Bay more remote?
Blanket Bay, and it's been a long time since I've actually stood on Blanket Bay, so Blanket Bay would still have the same characteristics of Matakari in terms of its topography. It's down low, it's got the rising topography behind, so you can't see any of Blanket Bay, the buildings from the main road. So you've got that degree of remoteness in terms of you're largely there kind of by yourself. But clearly the key difference is you've got between 30 odd kilometres extra distance from, say, Queenstown compared to Matakari Lodge, which is 8 kilometres or something like that. So I think physically, distance wise, it is more remote, but it has the same characteristics and if you're standing on site.
Which is critical, but you may actually say it's closer to the lodge, which is a body of population, which is a settlement.
True, yeah. So if referring to Queenstown, it is further away, but then the flip side is it is probably a 10-minute drive from Glenorchy.
It's just interesting to try and drive into that remote, because it's actually, it seems to be that remote is removed from a body of population, so then it's not necessarily the definition of remote, it's the definition of the body of the population that you're separated from. Mm.
It's fine. I think it's the same question I've asked you or others before. What's standing in the way of keeping on going on the resource consent track?
I knew that question was coming.
Be prepared for this.
A bit of history. So as detailed in my evidence and by Mr. Holm, every, apart from the jetty that's clearly not on the site, every resource consent being issued for Matakari Lodge was issued under the ODP Rural Lifestyle Zone. That zone, if you've had a chance to look at it, is particularly lightweight when it comes to landscape considerations. Compared to, and also in that zone's defence, it was 1998 when it was issued. So that zone is reasonably permissive. All of the consents bar one, which is the owner's cottage, was issued on a non-notified basis. We now have the issue that we've got the decisions version of the rural residential and rural lifestyle zone, and the provisions here are certainly not as enabling for visitor accommodation of this type on the Matakari site when compared to the ADP. So the issue is the overall status of further visitor accommodation buildings and activities is a discretionary activity under the ADP zone. There's a limit of 500 square metres per building size or footprint per building. There's a 10 metre height limit, 8 metre setback. So the status is discretionary, like it was under the ADP. The primary issues are objective 22.2.2 and three supporting policies that implement that that objective, and the objective talks about the predominant uses in the zone are rural and residential activities. Policy 22221 does provide for visitor accommodation. However, the issue for Mata Kauri is it needs to be compatible in terms of location, scale, size, or type with surrounding residential activities, or sorry, predominant activities. And then policy 22224 that talks about visitor accommodation being commensurate with what's anticipated in the zone and surrounding residential areas. So if we worked on a hypothetical situation that the site was vacant, a person wanted to come along and build, say, a 300 square metre home and partly use that as a lodge throughout the course of the year, in my view, you would have a very good argument to pass or not be contrary to these policies. But if we look at the current arrangement, Mata Kauri Lodge with 1,634 square metres of built form, whilst that's existing and it's there, you'd be struggling to say that such an or such a use would be consistent with these policies. And if we were to come along and to build up to 2,500, we've got issues with those policies and objective. So, compared to from the discussion from yesterday, looking at the Wakatipu Basin rural amenity zone, which does have more enabling policies. For this particular zone and for the type of visitor accommodation provided on the site and also for future expansion, we've got, well, there is real issues with those provisions.
I think Commissioner Dawson, if I could also just interject there from the point of view of the investor, there's a great deal of uncertainty, cost and delay from experience in resource consenting, and part of the reason for seeking a zoning change is to give some certainty to what is a nationally important tourist facility. I don't want to take that any further, but I think
probably quite a few people could say they have a Queensland district.
Well, there are not many people building lodges like this. This is a world internationally renowned resource. It's in a network. Recently, overseas investment approval was given to a fourth lodge site by the current government in a very sensitive location based on the track record of the Robertson family. So there are issues in consenting which are very frustrating, as I'm sure you're aware.
And everybody says that.
Yes.
Coming back to what Ms. Freeman said, I understand. I mean, it's good of you to draw our attention to the difference between what these policies say with the rural or water basin policies. They are somewhat different. And so what I'm hearing from you is that through its resource consent, Mata Kauri has already sort of grown beyond these policies, what might be anticipated by these policies. And if they're wanting to expand, there is going to be an impediment to that through the wording of the policies, which tie the scale to the predominant scale in that zone.
Yeah.
So I suppose my only question is, if the built development is incompatible with those policies, why would the built development on the same site under a different zone be compatible with that? Be compatible with that location? Why would it not be having adverse effects on that in that location?
Lost a little bit of
sorry,
that. No,
So there's an incompatible with the policies.
Mm-hmm.
Why would changing the zoning make the development more acceptable in terms of its effects?
In terms of its effects, so if you're looking at, if we're running an effects argument based on the current the rural lifestyle zoning, based on what was proposed in 2017, and I know, I keep apologising for bringing an RC back into this process, but that involved a lot of work as to where the site could be further developed. And obviously through landscape assessments in this forum, the site definitely has the potential to be increased or to be further expanded from a landscape perspective. I think as Ms. Lucas pointed out, excluding from the lake and from distance, the site is reasonably hidden from public places. But I would think, looking at those policies, it's pretty hard to argue, and I know planners can argue, but it's pretty hard to argue against basically that this site should have one house on it and that house could be used as a part lot and so forth, not a lodge with six buildings that have been there. Well, five of those buildings have been there since late 90s, early 2000s. So it has grown organically over time. And I can confirm there hasn't been any kind of desire to use that growth to someday try and get a different zone on it. But at this point, it doesn't fit into its current zoning in terms of what's exactly there.
Is that because the policies talk about the bulk and form and sort of go to actual physical aspects of what life is going to happen, whereas that's not necessarily representative of the effects? A bigger form has been able to be accommodated and possibly could be without affecting the neighbours, even if it's not of a Vulcan scale commensurate with what's been permitted in that zone.
I see the point. You go through and have issues with these policies, and if you look at the advantage of this site is it an amphitheatre, and also one thing of the quality of the lodge. In short, they don't want guests being seen from the outside, which means that's why everything's planted out. Its privacy is absolute, and so you've got topography, existing planning, and what they've done. And even though there's reference yesterday to within a 1.1 radius there is hundreds of houses, the reality is if you're looking down on an aerial map, that's the case. In real life, you've got property screening a lot of that, trees are screening a lot of it, so it's actually quite excluded from the residential neighbours. So I think, yes, there's an effects argument, but I still think there are issues with those policies.
Okay, and that's good. Thank
big
you
issues.
Thank you. That's all.
I'm good, thank you.
Yes, I will, sir.
We'll see what we will see. Mm-hmm. Thank you for your team.
Thank you, sir.
Cool. Thank you.
Thank you.
That looks like I'm on my own.
Before you start, I should tell you that the panel
Thank you. Now you can see I've come on my own without any legal representation, because I'd gone through a litigation process before with the mediation, and I thought.
I know you're an experienced lawyer.
I see. anyway, I've spent a lot of money on lawyers before, so I thought I'd come on my own and speak informally the situation as I see it, because I have to say that things came at me in a rather surprising fashion during COVID and post-COVID and coming up to here. Now, I've got some visuals here, models and things, which really do explain things a lot easier, and I might just bring them out and talk to them, and then later on leave you a statement which I did prepare, so that you don't think that I'm just coming here winging it. Exactly. I'm not going to take very long, and since it's quite an informal process, you can either see the model from there, or I could bring it to you, or you could come around here.
Perhaps you could explain that. I think what we should do is you should explain to us what the model is showing.
Yes.
And after you finish, we'll come and have a closer look.
Good. Right, this is 595, the site as you see it, as you would have seen it today. It's a 3D printed model. This is the site I purchased after, which is 563. And this is 633. So during the last round, at the mediation, the panel at that stage wished to know what I felt should apply to the various sites, whether this provision to build to below the Flankton Road, central line of Flankton Road, continue, or whether the dispensation that I had achieved through my design should apply. And towards the end, I figured out that I don't know what they're going to be doing other than the design that the agents produced, which complied with the height control line, 7 meter, because basically it is sloping site with some little flatter platforms. And as long as we were consistent, I felt we were, I couldn't really advise anything other than saying we should all be consistent. So whatever I had achieved, and for the reasons that I had achieved a dispensation, that is, to attempt to have a presence, an entry for the building, they should be allowed to do the same. Didn't have a problem with it. And it sort of ended there, and I didn't hear from them for a while, or from anybody for that matter. It then became apparent that there was seemingly a mistake on a plan, and they wanted to correct, council wanted to correct that plan. And the alarming part of that was that the upshot of that correction is that 633 now can build as of right above the centre line of Frankton Road. And that is continuous across the entire length of the site. And it turns out that I cannot. So whereas I was trying to assist in saying, well, if everybody is consistent, we should be okay. I have a resource consent, which I'm in the process of proceeding with. I have had discussions with Sky City numerous occasions, and their position is uncertain, and it's become even more uncertain in the COVID period. But as it was explained to me by my solicitor, who I then said, what in fact is going on, because there's an avalanche of paperwork and quite frankly I couldn't even follow it.
You're not the only one.
No.
We're working on it.
Yes, I can believe it. I thought I may as well come along and come back and say this was my understanding at the time of the mediation and why I withdrew, because we were all going to be consistent. But it turns out that we're not consistent. That they have the right, and again, a picture's worth a thousand words, because the brochure that the selling agent produced that made it clear they had they ignored the centre line conditions, and they demonstrated what could happen on this site, which was completely at odds with what I thought I'd agreed to at mediation. And the fact is that it's now proposed that we are uneven makes me think, well, in the unfortunate event, if my consent lapses for whatever reason, and we're all now in a precarious position with COVID, I have it one investor. Pre-COVID, we were looking at other investors. It's a long, protracted affair. And it suddenly occurred to me that if I didn't get all the investors in place and my consent lapsed, I would lose everything. Because the dispensation that I thought was in place and applied to all the sites has vanished. It only occurred to me about a week ago that was the case. I thought, well, I best put my hand up and say, that's a crazy situation, because everything that I've worked towards, all that, the reason for it, will have vanished. And my one investor that I have, you can imagine he'd be getting rattled. So it's two-pronged, really. One is that this site is now going to be complete, has a completely different set of rules to my site. And we're still, my site is worse off than 633. And that's really the gist of why I'm here.
Can I ask you for, tell us, what have you consented? Like, I understand the point that you're concerned that your resource consent might lapse because of the general COVID uncertainty and spooking your investor. What have you consented for your site?
What have I consented?
Yes. What is your resource consent authorised you for
to do? For business accommodation.
At the height, relative to the road, is it above?
Oh, yes.
So you got the right to go above the road?
Yes.
To a certain extent.
That help you? I also have a video that I might show you that also might help you.
No, I can understand a little bit. Just explain to me. You've got to give dispensation to go above the road. How far above?
So it's in the centre of the site.
Yes.
It's not to the sides. So that was the whole theory. I said, give me a dispensation to do what I want to do. And in fact, the rule was created around this particular application. And it then falls away to the sides. So the 7 meter height control applies to the sides, but not to the middle.
Gotcha. So that's what you've got consent for, that model?
That's what I've got consent for.
What's the other one? Just
should this fall away? This is what I started with, and I went to council in 2004 or thereabouts and said, this is what the rule says I can do, and it's a very, very dull design because all it does is complies. This is what I would like to do, but it doesn't comply. So they consented to this because they liked it. I didn't like that, understandably. This is dull, this is innovative.
You just want, when does your consent lapse?
It's got another 2 or 3 years to run.
One of the things that we thought when we were standing on the site, right, we'd read the council section 42A, we understood the author's logic, as I'm looking over your shoulder, Mr. Matthews' logic was that the purpose of the high rule was to maintain the views out, obviously, from the road, but that the way it had been applied further down the road made no sense because there were a whole lot of existing buildings either at grade or only just below grade, and you couldn't even build one story below and remain. It occurred to us that the site next to you is in fact a mixture. At your boundary, that site, there's a considerable distance below the road, but it slopes, the road slopes, and effectively the property is either reasonably flat or gradually rising as you go towards Frankton, and the road is going in the opposite direction. So if the far end of the property, there's very little difference in elevation, and it gradually rises. And we wondered, we explored with Mr. McMathy whether the actual the answer, if one was going to preserve the original rationale, is actually to put the boundary of the height limit somewhere around halfway along that site, so that at the end, I was going to say half, but we didn't measure it. Like, we would just say, it seemed to be a case at your end to have a height limit, but at the far end, the other half, where the tennis courts are, where it's quite close to the road, that wouldn't make sense. Now, what's your view of that, if you had a half and half? Mr. Matthew sort of thought it would all get too complicated in terms of development of that site. And would that solve the problem?
I can answer it in a different sort of way, hopefully. I was interested in this site, and we were engaged with taking out an option with my investor, but it got too complicated, and then Sky City usurped us in any case. But, so the purpose of bringing this model along is my site, excavated. And when you see these two alongside each other, the fact that it's got a few flat pieces to it, terracing, doesn't mean too much, because in effect, that some of it has been built up. This part here has been built up, but the natural topography would have been very similar. And what I would have done is similar to what I've done on my own, and that's basically to excavate it. Excavate it to a point where I think the gaps between the buildings is vital. So that's what I've done here. Gaps either side, you can see that here and here. So you still get views onto the mountains. You can't actually get views onto the lake because, in my case, because the property actually, the road is back here and the property extends before it drops down. So the reality is that they're not very different. The fact that that has some terraces here would actually arise. Another scenario you could have, which I think would be extraordinary, is that you could have a 12 metre high building on the flat part, then still excavate down to a level similar to this, and you'd get a very, very tall structure if you applied those rules. If, on the other hand, you said, let's be consistent between the two sites, that their widths are not too dissimilar, although the approaches are different, and said, apply the same rules to both sites, the likelihood of getting an innovative solution to 663, as opposed to what they've advertised they can do, and that's just simply build a wall of buildings right across an entire length, defeats the purpose of saying those controls to allow vistas through will result in a much more innovative design, because you've got to use your imagination far more than what you think you're entitled to, which is basically, as it stands now, is a wall of buildings with possibly just little gaps for fire escapes, a bit like this, right across the face. Because doing this is a natural response to the condition that's been imposed. Whereas if you said, I think the way this has been sorted, allowing these gaps, allowing a dispensation in the centre of the site, something similar, then you're going to get what you really want. You still have the vistas through, exactly the same, but they won't be in any way penalised in a from a coverage in bulk and the capacity for this site.
No, I'm just looking at the relief you saw. I mean, what you really suggested in your submission, or by your legal submission, is really saying you can basically have one story above the road. That's largely the guts, isn't it?
Yes.
Yes. Yeah, thank you.
Above. So yeah.
Yep. So that I understand what you're asking for, and I understand your rationale. Thank you.
Thank you very much, it's been very helpful. The removal of the Franklin Road height control to the centre line extends for numerous properties beyond the one next to you.
Yes.
Are you, is your concern relating to all those properties?
No.
Because, I mean, they're built up and they're in a slightly... You're really saying that this one next door to you more aligns with your side of the line than the other.
Correct. It's already built up beyond the ravine little area,
yes,
and it continues to. And of course, they're much smaller sites, so it doesn't quite apply.
Because there are gaps between sites. Yeah.
I think the rule is 10% of the length of the property that you build up, and 10% is an arbitrary number. In fact, all those numbers, 16 metres and 10%, they came as a result of the council at that stage saying, well, Mr. Ferrari, what would you like? 10%, is that okay? 16 metres, yeah. So it revolved around the design that I did. Because the interesting thing is that having purchased this block, it doesn't work. And that's fine. Because it's really, there will be, to have it below the Franklin Road centre line is just fine. But it's when you get to a larger property which needs the presence, and similarly here, I think it does.
But once further towards Franklin, getting into a whole different in terms of the size of the site, the level of existing development, the rule's fine. The exemption from the Franklin Road rule is fine for those properties.
Yep.
It's just here in this transition area where there's too large a site.
Yes.
All right. Thank you very much. That's clear.
So, I think me, I'd very much like to have a further look at the model.
Yes, Mike, I have no questions. I'm in the same boat. I just have like to have a good look at your model. And you said you had a presentation that you wanted to table.
Yes, I could do that after. I'll just leave that for you. It's something, a submission that the lawyer prepared for me about a week ago, and I read it this morning and knocked it around a little bit. I thought, well, I'd rather speak to it than leave it.
Well, we're very happy to leave on that basis. I think I'll adjourn the hearing.